Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and I am so happy to be with you, especially for this show, because you know here at Betrayal Recovery Radio, AppSats is the organization that sponsors this show, and it is to help betrayed partners find safety in an unsafe situation. And the goal is not only to help the partner, but to help the addict and the coupleship. So it's important for clinicians and coaches to be trained as to what sexual addiction is, what compulsive problematic sexual behavior is, and the different forms. And oftentimes, it can really be helpful to understand when an addict is in good recovery. And I was recently talking to a woman who was very impressed by her husband's recovery. And she was bragging on him. And it was really nice. I mean, I just had a woman in here earlier that said, I want to trust. I want to believe. I want to be vulnerable. But I don't know how. I don't know how to let my guard down and be vulnerable. And that is a secondary problem that occurs in all partner betrayal. I say secondary in that initially, when you're a partner, having discovered the betrayal is primary. You know, oh my gosh, how did this happen? Who am I living with, or who am I dating, or whom have I been married to for 20, 30, 40 years? And then what typically happens in the majority of the cases that I work with, the addict gets healthier. He makes strides in his recovery. He shows progress, not necessarily perfection. I've had several couples that I've worked with where the addict was doing well and then slipped. Did some pornography, looked at a website, looked at some images, texted back an old affair partner. You know, those kinds of things which are devastating to the partner. Absolutely throws him or her back into that state of trauma, she's triggered. But when he finally gets it, he finally is able to show good recovery. He's doing it consistently. He's gone through the process that we at APSATS feel is imperative to growth, and that's a disclosure. He's taking polygraphs. He's letting you look at his phone if you need to. He's appreciating any accountability tool that will, A, make you feel safe, and B, help him to do the next right thing until the brain science occurs and he's created new neural pathways in his brain that have replaced any kind of compulsive sexual problematic behavior. When that has occurred, oftentimes that next step for a partner is, how do I feel vulnerable enough to trust him again? And then thirdly, what that really oftentimes also translates into, how can I feel safe enough to trust myself? Now, I am always telling partners, you know what? Once you get through the shell shock of what you've been through, and once your brain's come back online a little bit, quite a while, because when you have that kind of partner betrayal, you're going to feel traumatized. But once some good recovery has occurred and you're through some of these events, then the next great thing is that you are a different person in terms of your ability to trust yourself. And here's why. You know, you said, how can I trust him again? How can I trust myself? Well, that's when you didn't even know he was lying. That's when you weren't sure of the gravity of the situation that was going on. Maybe there were some concerns. Maybe you had some fears. Maybe there were some signs, but you didn't get it until true discovery occurred. And so you need to trust yourself because you are trustworthy. And you know that now that you know, you're in that hypervigilant state. Nothing's going to get by you. Or if it does, it's not going to be the same. So for all the women out there, all the partners that are worried about trusting their sense of reality, you can bring your guard down just a little bit and say, you know what? Now that I know who I was dealing with and he's passed a polygraph test and he's getting some regular polygraph tests, I can breathe a little bit deeper and take this a day at a time, or maybe it's a segment of time. Maybe it's from polygraph to polygraph every 3 or 4 months. Maybe it's as long as he's working all those recovery tools with vigor. Maybe it's when you get into some early couples recovery work, which is different than couples counseling, and you continue to negotiate what it is you need and want to be safe. I know that that is so important. And today we've got Brett on, and he is a sex addict. And he wanted to talk with you all about his recovery, his motivation, how the polygraph worked into that, and his testimony about polygraphs. You may have heard me say it before, but I will deal with the nicest addicts in the world. They're working recovery. They are so grateful for me. They're so grateful for their program and their sponsor. But as it gets closer to their first polygraph test, oh, they get ugly. I mean, they are mad at me, and they're afraid they're not going to pass, and they're afraid they haven't remembered everything, and they don't want this messing up their marriage, and she deserves to trust him. And, you know, they just come in with a real edge. And I get to see what a lot of you see day in and day out, because there is a tension there. They are afraid of that polygraph. And, you know, obviously, Brett has made it his mission to help people understand his own plight. And he wrote this testimonial, and it was really special. He said, you know, at first, hearing the word polygraph might cause a person to recoil with the thought, that seems really extreme. As a recovering addict suffering from sexual brokenness and someone who has taken a polygraph as part of the disclosure process, I now believe it is an extremely helpful tool for those who wish to experience recovery, truth, and freedom. It's important to note that working with a trained and aligned polygrapher who has partnered with an addiction and or partner counselor is critical. The first and most obvious benefit is that it establishes a baseline of truth. The spouse can believe and build upon the whole truth without omission or distortion. This step is essential for rebuilding marital trust. The second is that a trained and compassionate polygrapher works in partnership with the addict, not against the addict. Even with a sincere intention to be honest on the part of the addict, it is often a gargantuan task after years of self-deception, minimizing, denying, and suppression. And boy, I really believe that. So Brett is saying, even with a sincere intention to be honest on the part of the addict, what Brett and I both know, and you probably do too, you know, that you're living this life, is that addicts have lied for so long with such intensity and frequency, they'll lie about the simplest things. They'll lie to minimize something because they don't think it's important to the partner. They'll lie because she's already been hurt so much. Why hurt her again? And so Brett says that this, using a trained polygrapher and having this test, allows him and addicts to be more honest, fully present and honest. They won't minimize, deny, or suppress what may be going on. Cannot imagine another tool that could pinpoint these areas so thoroughly. I found my time with the polygrapher to be one of the most intimate and healing encounters of my life. And so, we're going to be talking to him about his sexual brokenness, and we're going to be working with him to find out what powerful and positive impact it has had on his life and in his marriage, how it has helped his wife. Because if you are an APSATS-trained clinician or coach, you are helping your partner, the addict, or the coupleship to renew the trust that was broken. And I can't say enough about that. That is absolutely imperative, to renew that trust. And to do that, you have to have safety and stabilization. And you have to have gone through the grief process. And then you and your partner need to decide, how can you restore the relationship? And actually, for some people, make it better than it's ever been. Now, it is so important to really have opportunities for communication. And it's up to the addict to figure out how to negotiate the relationship based on what the partner needs. And so I'm here to tell you that anybody who's doing the APSATS model knows that in many respects, it's imperative for the addict to be sensitive to the partner's needs and to put her first. He may put his recovery first, and that's absolutely okay, but he's always looking at the betrayal trauma that he caused and asking himself, what can I do to make my partner feel safe? So that is what you've got looking forward to today, because Brett has obviously made it his mission to increase his recovery as well as to make his relationship feel safe. Brett, welcome to Partner Betrayal Radio. How are you?
Carol, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on. I can't say that I ever thought I would be on a radio show like this, but life has been such that I'm really glad to be here, and I'm really glad to be able to talk about this. It's great to be a part of your show.
Well, thank you. And I just read your testimonial before you came on, where you talked about the three very important reasons why a good polygrapher and a sound polygraph can make an entire difference in the life of the coupleship, in the life of the wife, and in your own recovery as well. So I was wondering if you would be willing to share a little bit about your experience in your recovery from porn addiction and what your backstory is. Tell me a little bit about the addiction story.
Well, just briefly, I mean, I began a relationship with pornography as a child. This was pre-high-speed internet, but still had access as a kid, and then especially into mid-high and my high school years, had access to magazines. That began this addictive cycle in my life, where I used it as a medication. It was how I was able to cope with pain and crisis and things in my life, and sometimes boredom and so on and so forth. And by the time I got into college, it was a part of my, you know, if not daily life, weekly life, that's for sure. And then I got married. And, you know, long story short, I mean, I assume, like many people, you know, that, well, once I was married, you know, this will change. And of course it didn't. And so now, to complicate matters, that, you know, while I was in college, I had a pretty profound faith experience and ended up becoming part, went into a full-time faith-based organization, went into full-time ministry, and that's where I met my wife, and we entered into a life of which we were having, you know, an impact on college students' lives, and we're living this, what was really amazing, having an amazing impact, but at the same time, kind of coiled in the corner of my life this whole time was this addiction that was would ebb and flow, sometimes feel like it was under control, sometimes, but it never was. And so early in my marriage, this was revealed that I was struggling with this addiction. It was very, very traumatic for my young wife at the time, had only been married about a year. I took some steps to try to heal, you know, read some books and had some accountability, but I didn't, for one, I didn't have a clue about how profound this was entrenched into my life, or how deeply it was impacting me. And two, I didn't know what I was up against. And it wasn't long before I was again using pornography. By this time, you know, the internet had blossomed, and now the whole world had opened up. So because of my, as I grew older, the problem that I continued to, the quandary I kept having was the stakes kept getting higher. Every every month and year that time passed and me not confessing this, you know, I added more responsibilities to my job, which is in ministry. I began having children with my wife. The stakes grew higher, and so the voice inside of me of, like, you can never say anything about this because you will lose everything. Everything you care about will be taken from you, so you must. It's imperative that you keep this secret. And I was able to do that, unfortunately, for about nearly 20 years. And then about 4 years ago, the lid blew off my life, and my wife became aware. She had suspected for a while. I mean, her intuition was such that she knew something was going on, that she, you know, was willing to give me the benefit of the doubt, I think, in many ways. But man, the lid blew off 4 years ago, and our lives fell apart, and caused tremendous, tremendous heartbreak to my wife and my children, who by this point were in college, or one in high school, one in college. And I lost a lot. I certainly didn't lose everything, I'm glad to say, but I did lose a lot. I lost my job. I lost a lot of friends. It was very, very, very painful.
And so when you say I lost a lot of friends, explain that transition. I get why it really was devastating to your wife, but tell me about the friendships. You confessed to people?
Right. Some of it had to do with my circumstances, and that I was, was in full-time, in a faith-based organization, full-time Christian ministry, and had a fairly public and elevated role in that organization. And so my hypocrisy, first of all, was a huge shock to people that I had been living the secret life. It was just hurtful. And I think for many people, it was just too much to, they just had to, for their own sakes, just kind of step away. And also a result of that was that group of people I worked with, that was also our community. And so, you know, in terms of people we're doing life with, you know, most people, they lose their job. They don't necessarily, that doesn't impact their friends or their neighborhood, but those were very intertwined for us. The people we worked with who were also some of our best friends, most of them my best friends. And so, and to their credit, many have been very wonderful and continue to support me and stuff, but some, it just was just too painful.
Okay. And that totally makes sense. But I also believe that, one of the hardest things for a sex addict to deal with is the fact that now people see them as being dishonest and being a liar. And so that was the mountain you had to overcome. And that those lies and deceit, right?
Right. Yeah, that is a fear, and it's based in the reality that I did lie, and I was deceitful, and I not only betrayed my wife, but I betrayed the community of people that put a lot of trust in me, who thought they knew me, and there was this secret side to my life, and so it was one of the reasons that I had, you know, the parts of me that worked so hard to keep this secret were so fearful of being rejected. Mm-hmm. You know, when I look at my life, Carol, I mean, I think when I trace back, you know, in the work I've done the last 4 years about, you know, how in the world did I get here? You know, some of the things that drove me on the most just basic level was just this terror of being rejected and abandoned. And ironically, you know, that's how it felt initially as I, you know, came to, you know, this became open and public. But it was that kind of very pain that often drove me to be secretive. And so it was this kind of this catch-22 in my own life that fortunately that cycle's been broken, but it was very, you know, it's really hard to get out of that. I am empathetic to any addict that feels trapped in that cycle.
Yeah. So painful and yet also liberating. And you and I both believe in God, and we believe that clearly when you get honest and and you tap into that spirituality, God will give you gifts through all this too. So now I want to ask you, how did it ever come to be that you were going to take a polygraph? You mentioned a disclosure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those things were tied hand in hand. And fortunately, my wife was able to, it was wise enough and also able to connect with some individuals who were trained like you in you know, helping partners walk through betrayal. And they started to speak into her life and say, here's what you need. Here's what you need to be safe and to have boundaries. And if there's going to be any chance of this, you know, marriage to survive and for things to move forward, then you're going to need to, you know, set some protective boundaries for yourself and in a sense, you know, give Brett the opportunity to show that he's willing to do whatever it takes to recover. And so fortunately, so they made the recommendation or began to educate my wife and myself through her about, you know, what's the role of disclosure and then this idea of the polygraph. And that was not good news to me, you know, initially. I mean, I was not, oh, hey, that sounds like a great idea. I'd love to do that. It was terrifying, the concept and the idea of that. Maybe outwardly I was trying to do everything I could to kind of, you know, be helpful and to show that I was willing to do whatever I could. But on the inside, I was just, everything in me was screaming, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this.
And what was your greatest fears about the polygraph? Because I was just talking about that earlier, and I said that's when addicts that I work with that have the best personalities, they really are loving their recovery, they feel they're on the right road, and then you talk polygraph, and they're so scared that they get angry.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I know for myself, Carol, that a lot of it had to do with I was still at that point in my life, the very beginning of stages of my recovery. And when this was first put out there, I hadn't even fully disclosed yet. In fact, I had, you know, like most addicts, I had minimized and kind of compartmentalized whole areas of my life where I wasn't even being truthful with myself, let alone my spouse, you know. And so the idea that I would lose control of the narrative and the story and that somebody else could, you know, that I would no longer, you know, I'd be helpless in a sense. And then it felt the vulnerability, and it was hard to even know why I felt that way, but I felt that kind of vulnerability would kill me somehow. I can't really even explain it. But I knew that it would mean I would lose control and there'd be parts of the narrative that I was still trying to keep going I didn't know what would happen to that. So there's that part. And then there's the unknowns about the polygraph. It's a misunderstood science, and there is an incredible scientific method and a ton of research behind this, and there's a lot of misconceptions about the polygraph, about its accuracy and its use and how it's used. And, you know, we watch movies and see, you know, the simplification and often the worst case, you know, kind of examples are kind of shown. And that hasn't been my experience at all. But I had a lot of those misconceptions. You know, I just like, well, how do I know this is accurate? And so on and so forth. So I had a lot of fears going into that.
Well, and I think you referenced it beautifully when you said loss of control. I mean, you got to worry about, gosh, have I really told her everything? And that's based on a disclosure. And then you've also got to wonder, what if I didn't? What if subconsciously something pops up the day of? And then it's also that loss of control. What if it misreads me? And so there's that fear that you're trying to do everything right. And what if something messes up?
Yeah.
So I know you had said that truly it's important for the therapist or the coach to have a great awareness of how a polygraph can be used and a good polygrapher who understands sexual addiction. What do you think the polygraph did for you?
Yeah, so it I mean, I would say it did a few things for me. One, it gave me an opportunity to demonstrate to my wife that it mattered, that her safety and her boundaries mattered to me. She had been, you know, as someone had been deeply, deeply wounded and betrayed, it didn't matter what I said. It was my actions were what was going to matter. And sometimes it's hard to figure out, well, what am I supposed to do? What action should I take? And this was one that was so clearly, you know, it was so profound. And that feels to many people radical. Like, you know, you're going to do what? You know, most people, probably even yourself at some point, were just kind of like, I don't know if that seems so extreme. But I know for myself, I knew on one level that what it would do for me would give me an opportunity to show my wife that I really that my recovery really mattered and her knowing what was true mattered. Then also what it did was it provided a baseline for her to know what was real. You know, I had gaslit her, if I can use it that way. The gaslighting that I had done towards my wife for 20 years had, you know, the damage of that is just it's hard to imagine and measure. And so for her, I mean, how does anything out of my mouth have any credibility? And so this provided a way in which to say, okay, this is objectively, you can know that, you know, this is what's real in your relationship. This is what's true about Brett. So those things, you know, and those were very helpful for my wife and thus helpful for me because it gave her a place where she could still stay engaged with me because she felt some sort of a level of, you know, a level of safety and a level of truth was, you know, reality was being, was in our relationship. But I think the part I didn't expect. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, please.
Well, I was just going to ask you, so she was the person that came to you and said, hey, will you do this? Or I mean, again, how did you even know that a polygraph part of the process?
I didn't until she did. She did come to me. And by coming to me, what that means is she said, hey, you know, these folks have said that this is an important part of this whole process. I would like you to do this. I want you to take a polygraph. So I had never heard of it before. And I'd heard of it, but I mean, I just didn't think that, you know, everything in me didn't want to do something like that. And fortunately, you know, we connected with a counselor in Atlanta, Georgia, who had worked, you know, he was very, you know, well-trained in terms of being able to help a partner and knew the role of this and had a really great relationship worked closely with a polygrapher who was, you know, more trained in, you know, you don't want to just go to the phone book and look up, polygraph, right? And because there's lots of people that do these things, but you really want someone who's working in concert with someone trained such as yourself and how to help partners and then also the role of the polygraph as a therapeutic tool. This is it's not a gotcha thing. It's not a, hey, you're going to be busted if you blow it. This is a tool in the toolbox of a therapist's hands helping both the addict and the partner work through getting to a place where they can establish intimacy based on real integrity. And I think that you know, they're polygraphers trained. A lot of the folks are in law, came out of law enforcement. But I'd really recommend finding somebody who's more, you know, whose bent is the therapeutic side of things, who really has a good relationship with a therapist that understands what this is about, you know, and how working with you. They're not, you know, you don't just walk in there. They hook you up and they ask you gotcha questions. It's a lot of work to get to the point to even take the test, and that work really made an impact for me.
Well, I so agree with you that it's important that you all work together in concert so that it isn't a we're going to bust you. It really is a have you been totally honest? Because if you haven't or if something does come up, then there's time to talk about that with your wife. So that you can then reformulate the question and have the information that she so desperately wants, because what we know is partners want truth. They want all the truth. They want to know how safe they can feel. And you've used that word safety 3 or 4 times, and I got to tell you, this show is sponsored by AppSats, and that is the first stage that we work in, the first phase for a partner is how can we make her feel safer? Now, this, your polygraph came after a disclosure. So would you just share with our listening audience, what was that disclosure like before the polygraph?
Well, it was painful, and it was a lot of work, and frankly, you know, well, so we did that in the context of a long, you know, a few days session in Atlanta with this therapist, and I had, you know, spent, you know, hours, you know, preceding that and actually days just kind of working on just trying to get everything down, everything out. And then, through the guidance of our counselor, did the disclosure. And then the follow up of that, and whether that's the right order or not, the follow up of that was then to the counselor and my wife formulated the questions that were still in her mind. These are the things I need to know, you know, and it's not. You know, you've probably pointed out before that it's not, you know, you're not sitting down and being asked 20 questions. Really, a skilled polygrapher will take the questions of the spouse and made in concert with the therapist, and then they begin an interview with you as the person being tested. And I, you know, before I was, you know, even sat in the chair, I talked probably 2 hours the first time with the individual conducting the polygraph, and they walked me through. We just dug in, and they're very skilled at kind of getting down deeper and deeper and deeper. And like an onion, you know, there was question after question. In fact, far deeper questions than even my wife or therapist had asked. And so it was kind of like a cleansing. It was like a kind of really amazing confession. And in a safe place. There was no judgment. They were just trying to say, we just need to get all of this out, because the body doesn't lie. Once I start, when I ask you these questions, if there's anything buried there, is there anything you're holding back, it will be shown. The test will show it. And as a result, you know, it'll come back as inconclusive or fail in terms of a specific question. It might not even be exactly that question, but something in you, if you're holding something back, will cause you to have a physiological response. So that was, you know, that was quite a process. And frankly, it was really intimidating. It was tough. There's no question about it.
Okay. So then again, when you meet with the polygrapher and he sits down with you, and the polygrapher that I use after a disclosure as well as follow-up after that, they hook you up to electrodes, right? I mean, what
yeah,
is
so
the physical act?
Yeah. So, again, this is a lot of times the you know, the misconceptions from television or, you know, Meet the Falkers and, you know, Robert De Niro's hooking Ben Stiller up to a machine in his basement. Okay, this is the equipment used by a qualified, trained, certified polygrapher is incredibly high tech. And so, you know, you'll sit in a specific chair that measures whether or not you're shifting or moving a lot. Your feet will most likely be on a plate that will determine whether or not pressure is being applied on your feet. You have a sensor on your finger that will measure things from like perspiration. There's breathing rate that's measured and your heart rate's measured. And then they're also just, you know, able to observe you. It's more than just your heart rate or something like that. There's no pain involved. It's uncomfortable only that you just have to sit still. You're asked a yes or no question. And the information will be what's taken out. It will be entered into, you know, forget the paper with the squiggly lines. That hasn't been true for a long time. These trained polygraphers will use now computer, and the computer programs that are used in this, the algorithms that are used to measure this stuff is unbelievably advanced, and which does two things. One, it ups the accuracy of these things is very high. I know a lot of fear would be about, well, what if it's not accurate? It's like, well, first of all, it's, you know, generally a single issue polygraph, which is not what I would take, because that's just asking a question. You know, it's in the 90% in 90s, you know, for somebody to take multiple, you know, the complexity of something the things I was asked, you know, the accuracy rate is, you know, anywhere from 89% to 93%. And so, and if there is a mistake, often it's a false negative. It's not a false positive, which it makes it safer even for the spouse. And even if there is a false negative, it doesn't mean that's the end of the story. It just means that we might need to ask some more questions and dig a little bit deeper and see why did you react during that question? What's going on for you? Is it deception, or is it just that there's something inside of you that still needs to disclose, or there might be more to the story that you weren't even aware of?
That's a great description. So now let me ask you, what did the polygraph test do for your relationship with your wife and the coupleship in general? How did it create some bonding?
Yeah, well, so I will say the very first test I took, you know, we went down three years ago, went down to Atlanta. The first one I took, I actually, Carol, I didn't pass, which was,
okay.
You know, which was catastrophic, because I sincerely, and this is, I'm glad to be able to talk about this, because the idea for most, you know, spouses would be, well, if I fail, then that's it. Well, I just say, first of all, that wasn't it. Now, it wasn't good that I didn't pass. Okay. It wasn't helpful for my wife. She was distraught, but I knew, I personally knew, I'm not trying to be deceitful here. I'm not sure why I didn't pass. It was a specific question. But because I was in this, you know, for me, a supportive structure in which the polygrapher was able to interact with my counselor and say, here's where you probably need to dig, and have them do some more work in there. And so what I did, Carol, is Corey actually flew home. My wife flew home. And then I spent a couple more days in Atlanta doing more work, one with a counselor, and even just kind of spending time going, well, digging in deeper into my life. And I actually, there were memories that I hadn't had since I was a kid. There were things that actually came out. I expanded that disclosure. Much of it was pre-marriage even, but it was just things that were inside of me that were impacting that test. And so I went back a few days later and took it again, and passed. So that made a huge difference for my wife. One, and it's traumatic to have your spouse go through a polygraph. You know, none of this is fun. None of this is good. Or there's nothing about any of this that all of a sudden, if I do this, then everything will be better. It's just that it was a stepping stone for her to feel like, okay, my husband is trying. I have a baseline of truth, so we can begin to have these other conversations and talk about, I don't have to feel crazy. I know what's real now. And until that happens, you know, what can you possibly talk about? What could I say to her that she wouldn't have some sort of thread of doubt that wondering whether or not I was lying or not? So this gave us a whole new lease. Again, it wasn't a magic pill that all of a sudden everything was better, but it did create some space. It was kind of like it cleaned out the, you know, just kind of this area in our lives that we knew, okay, there are no surprises here now. There's nothing here and that's going to shock her or hurt her from the past, because it's all out. It's all on the table.
Well, and I love the fact that it actually, because you had such a good polygrapher and such an important team, it helped you to dig deeper and work on some issues that you didn't even know existed within you to heal. Because if you had known what you didn't know, you wouldn't have been able to heal that. So it was.
That's a part that's not talked about very often. It wouldn't have occurred to me either until I experienced that. And I think is that the polygraph has been an enormous part of my own healing. You know, we think about it in terms of the first, and this is true, of the safety of the spouse and accountability and things like that. Those things are all true, and it's a good tool to help in those areas. But in my experience, Carol, one of the things that it did was it caused me to dig down into my life in areas that had been very, very buried. Honestly, in the first time in my whole life, I felt like I could say, I have no secrets. And that's the wound is cleaned out. You know, you actually have a chance to heal when that's the case. You know, if you leave debris in a wound, no matter how much you try, it won't heal correctly, or probably the infection most likely will grow. So the wounds of my life started, you know, it wasn't that they weren't still there. It was just that they were clean now, and I could actually begin the process of healing in areas that, man, I didn't even know they were a thing until I did that test. It was probably one of the most powerful and oddly most intimate experiences I've ever had in my life. And I would never have thought that, and not to say it wasn't scary in so many ways, but it was profound in my own, self-knowledge, and profound in my belief that, hey, maybe my life could be different. Maybe I don't have to end my life as an addict. Maybe I can actually recover from this thing.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. And you have had subsequent polygraphs since. So tell our listeners a little bit about why you took additional polygraphs.
Right. So it's kind of like going back to the dentist. If you haven't been to the dentist, which this is actually true in my own life, for years and years and years, you know, the first trip back is really hard, right? There's a lot of work to do. But if you keep that up, you know, and you go back for a cleaning here and there, it's a lot easier process. The visits are shorter. And in a lot of ways, what my wife really wanted to do or one of the things that she expressed was that this would be helpful for her from time to time to have this take place, that she could just continue to, you know, that this isn't just a one-time deal, but then what if I slowly start to slide or compromise? And I frankly agree with her. I lived decades of my life in self-deception. My ability to self-deceive and to slide, sometimes slowly and sometimes rapidly, I'd be foolish to underestimate that. And so I've since then subsequently have had two other times, past those both times, but there was kind of work to do before each one of them. I had to think back to the, you know, in both cases it was a year, and go, okay, so is there anything I need to say here? You know, was there any, you know, and this time it wasn't huge reveals, but there were smaller things that are going to go, oh yeah, I this was a compromise here, or these were things that maybe I didn't express to my accountability group, not even to court, but my accountability group that I needed to, or just areas of my life, you know, and it was very, very helpful. And I come back from that. And again, it's still hard to do, and it's hard actually for my wife as well. But the fact is I come back from that, and it feels like this, okay, good. We're on track. Have this great reset, again. So that's been super helpful to continue to do that. And I have a relationship with that counselor and the polygrapher, and I trust him. You know, I felt like I was putting my life in their hands, and I was. And as a result of this happening, I mean, it's created this, you know, huge, amazing trust bond with these people. And I feel like, okay, these people are partners within me in living in reality and truth. And the reality of having a polygraph coming up in a, you know, whether it's 6 months or a year, it's a frame of reference for me, Carol, where there'll be times and, you know, during a week or a month where I'm just like, it'll occur to me, okay, if I compromise in this way, or if I, you know, start to move down this path, is this just something that will show up or not on the polygraph? And it's like another buddy that you're accountable to. It's like, yeah, but you won't fool this buddy. You know, sometimes I fooled lots of friends. I fooled lots of people. I was willing and able to lie to everybody from therapists, my best friends, to my wife. And I have had to relearn, you know, or really learn for the first time how to be radically truthful. And the polygraph is a tool that helps me keep that in perspective, and I'm grateful for it.
Well, I know, and that's a wonderful way of saying that, because truly that's what recovery is all about. It's about gratitude for the things that you have available to you to help hold you accountable. It's not a resentment tool, it's a gratitude tool. So I love that you feel grateful, and again, it just reinforces that your wife can trust you and she can feel safe. So you've been married how long?
Well, it'll be 25 years in November.
Okay, 25 years. And if she were sitting here with me, what would she say the greatest gift is regarding the work you're doing and the polygraph test?
Wow. Gosh, that's a great question. You know, I think it took me a long time to become convinced of this, because I had become so damaged and broken because of my addiction that I really couldn't fathom that anybody, including my wife, really loved me or could love me if they knew the truth about me. That belief was on a core, deep level. And one of the ways that the polygraph, you know, had an impact in that was as the whole me came out and was laid before my wife, and she chose in her grace and just the beauty of her heart to not reject me, but to say, you know, it's okay that you're broken. It's just what you have to be, though, is honest. When I experienced her continuing to care and love me, even though she knew everything about me and there was no question that she knew it all, then that was transformative. And I think not just one for me, of course, but then I think I'd like to think it has been for her too, because it gives, you know, her a belief that there could be a chance that the guy that she thought she was marrying is actually a real person. And I really hope that bears out to be true. I believe it is. It will. But I think the taking the polygraph was a real godsend in our lives, and to help us, you know, kind of to move down that road. So I don't know did that answer your question? I'm not sure if I strayed off there.
It sure did. And I happen to know your wife, and I know that she was so pleased when you had that witness testimony about polygraphs. And I asked her, of course, oh, may I see it? I'm not your wife's therapist or anything, just a colleague.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that, and I said, this is a man who understands recovery, but more than recovery, he understands that honesty is at the foundation for sex addiction recovery. And so I so appreciate you taking this time and helping our listeners to understand that this is not a punishment. This is something to help hold you accountable, build that trust, reform the relationship, and again, the important part is to get a skilled clinician who knows the community, who knows where to send you, and then a good polygrapher who wants you to pass. He wants to do whatever it takes to get you to pass in an honest way.
Right. Exactly.
So now you described yourself as having sexual brokenness. And as we wrap up the show, would you explain what sexual brokenness is, and then would you describe who you are now?
Well, I mean, I would say that, in my world, what that means to me, at least, is that I, and from a very young age, began to misappropriate the gift that sex is and that sexuality is and used it as a means of coping with my life. I was, and as a result of that, became addicted, had compulsive behaviors, most of which centered around the use of internet pornography. But my life became, as we say in the 12 steps, became unmanageable. I could not control those impulses, my life became just spiraled out of control. And you weren't actually probably able to see that from the outside, but it was that broken part of me took over, it was leading me towards death. I felt like I was dying in my inner life. And so I had a skewed perspective of what sex was. I could tell you what it should be, but deep inside of me, I misused it because it was so critical in kind of my survive in these parts of me that needed it to survive through the crisis and pain that it was experienced. And so I'd never learned how to, I had an intimacy disorder. I wasn't really able to connect with God or myself or with others. And though I appeared to be able to do that, but I wasn't able to do that. And so I misused sex in order to medicate and to feel things. And that led me to a very, very dark place.
And so now that you've got all this recovery and you've got a very healthy and healing relationship with your wife, how would you describe yourself today?
Yeah, well, I go back to just kind of one of the first things, on a weekly basis, in one of the groups I do, it's called a faster scale. And one of the things, it just kind of measures, you just kind of a self-awareness tool. And one of the important things I want to circle on that every week is, do I have any current secrets? And I love the fact, I love living a life, I've lived so much of my life in this secretive world where I kept secrets from people, but even more probably, and it took a while to get to this place, but I had secrets for myself. I could not face reality. It was a very terrifying thing to kind of at one point, years after I started my recovery, to kind of wake up to like, what am I? I don't even know myself. I felt crazy. And that now is not true in my life. I feel like a whole person. Like I have an identity and I have a purpose. And I struggle. I'm still, wrestling through, these radical changes in my life. But I mean, I have a community of people in my life who know everything about me. I have no secrets, and I have a family in which I'm able to rebuild with. And that, boy, that's really awesome.
Well, Brett, I cannot thank you enough for sharing that purpose with us today. This was a fabulous interview, and continued success for people who suffer from the same situation you did. God bless.
Thanks, Carol. I appreciate being on the show, and I'm grateful for the work you do. I think it really matters, and I wish you every bit of success as well.
Okay. I will call on you again, I promise. So thanks again, and have a great week.
All right. All right, you too.
All right. Bye. So obviously, a man with a purpose who uses polygraphs to help keep him accountable, it doesn't get any better than that. You are listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio. I'm Carol, the coach, and we'll see you next week.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.